This is People in the Know. I'm Ken Root. I have this week a gentleman who comes from my part of the world. I have roots in Oklahoma. They're named Root, but he has roots in Oklahoma. They're named Liston and other family names. His name is Jackie Liston. And Jackie comes from a town that's about 8 miles from where I grew up. But his story is much more than just the rivalry between the two towns. It is a story of his determination as a businessman, pulling from his farm background, and then being able to go into the land business in the 80s, a very challenging time across all of the Midwest, but I think particularly so in the hardscrabble areas of Oklahoma, and then on to the banking industry and a very satisfying career. So, Jackie Liston, how are you today, sir?
Ken, I'm very grateful. It's good to be on your program today.
Well, you and I have a commonality in where we grew up. I knew of your father. You're younger than I am, but you're in your 60s at this time, is that correct?
62.
And you grew up in a little town that was fairly small outside Oklahoma City. Of course, the whole area changed tremendously through the years. And the reason of us getting together for this podcast and the radio program is that you wrote a book, and the book is called A Place Called Through, THROUGH, A Place Called Through. Interesting how that you titled it. You know, Willie Nelson has a song that sometimes you don't get over it, you just get through it. And maybe that may be somewhat similar to the world that you have lived in through the years. Why did you title the book that?
Well, I have a question that I ask people, Ken. Have you ever been in a place in your life you didn't think you could make it through? And I think all of us can have been in those places. You know, it's we've all been there one time or another, right? And it's not really if we get in those positions, Ken, but when. And how we respond to the situations that we find ourselves in is essential. And I think the key of this whole thing was trusting God to bring me through. And I think that was the big key here. And right. I can get into later how I got named, but, you know, there is a place called Through. It's a real place. And I think we all have experienced that one time or not another in our life.
Well, there is a factor called timing. And when you were born or when you go into business or when you do various things in your life makes a huge difference. And in the case of you going from your farm background and moving into the land real estate business, which is a major part of your story, the timing could look good at that time, but it was not a good time as you moved on through it because of the recession that we had beginning at the end of the 1970s. So your story is quite frankly, in the book, delightful to read, but somewhat convoluted in that you had so many hurdles to jump and so many things you had to do in a certain order just to stay in business. It almost tired me out, Jackie, to read through the challenges you faced.
Yes, you know, you never know what you're made of until you get tested, right, Ken? And so that's why I put my background in there, you know, growing up on a small hog and dairy farm there in Jones, Oklahoma. And you knew my dad, Bob Liston. Dad was a what I call a pig rock star. Mm-hmm. We had some of the best in the nation. I asked him one time, I said, Dad, how do you know that little baby pig's going to be a national champion? He said, Son, I don't know. I just know. And you knew my dad well. He wore big old Stetson. I think for the first 10 years of my life, I thought my dad was John Wayne, seriously. And, you know, I've got two brothers, Bart and Bobby. They've carried on the hog tradition very well. But, you know, it's those challenges on the farm, Ken, and I know you grew up there in Luther on the farm. And I've read a lot of stories over the years, which I really admire your work. And so growing up in Luther and growing up in Jones, how we worked, we learned a lot how to overcome problems. I realize that now. And that was preparing me for what was getting ready to happen to me in the 80s. And everything, Ken, that could go wrong outside of my control did. And, you know, Zig Ziglar has a great quote. He said, it's not what happens to you in life. It's how you handle what happens to you in life.
Yeah, I would very much agree with that. So you faced that situation, and you drew from this background, but in your book, you give credit, and I think all of us should do this, especially the older we get, give credit to those people who helped us. Maybe they didn't know that they were truly helping us at the time, but they were there to help. And the specifics of this, I mean, you start out with the guy that was teaching you VOTEC, just some things that you held on to that were taught to you that you moved forward through the rest of your life.
That's correct. You know, I've been so blessed, Ken, to have so many great men and women pour into my life. You know, I talk about my grandma Liston in the story there. You know, my roots run deep in Oklahoma like yours do. You know, left in the middle of the Depression, and my grandfather, my dad's dad, died, Herbert Liston, in 1934, 35 years of age, left grandma with five kids and a little bit of debt on the farm. She was a home executive, and she went back to teaching school and had the first 7 years of my life with her, and, you know, she poured into my life. She's in my book. And then, yes, my VOTEC instructor, Mr. Prieto, great influence in my life. You know, tell some funny stories there in the beginning, and, you know, just poured into me. And all my life I've had instructors. You know, I was in FFA. I've got two vocational trainings, auto body and then FFA. Two of the great programs that really shaped and molded me in my life that I still use today, the values that
I
learned.
And you started out, Jackie, as a mechanic, didn't you? That's the first job?
Auto body, yeah.
The farm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, between my junior and senior year, Mr. Prieto, he called us by our last name. He said, Liston, go down and apply at Baltimore Cadillac. They're looking for a body man. There was another young man named Rick Smith that went to the paint shop. And made my applications. My Uncle Gene sold cars there in downtown Oklahoma City for Baltimore Cadillac. And I said, hey, Uncle Gene, put a good word in for me. And he did. And I tell a funny story there that I never heard back. Well, I sold Mr. Prieto a pig to butcher, and he was out picking up the pig at the farm one day. And he said, Liston, did you get the job at Baltimore Cadillac? I said, no, sir, they never called me back. He said, well, call Crossroads Chrysler Plymouth. They're hiring. So I did. The guy interviewed me, and he said, I'm going to hire you, Jackie. It's on a Friday. Pay me $3 an hour. I got home, Ken, the phone was ringing. It was Pat at Baltimore Cadillac. I said, Jack, got your stall all ready and ready to go to work? And I said, Pat, I just got a job. And he said, what are they paying you? I said, $3 an hour. He said, how's three and a quarter sound? I said, you got a deal. So I called up the manager at Crossroads Chrysler, and he said, oh, I appreciate you calling me back. I said, oh, that's the right thing to do. And that experience between my junior and senior year was amazing. And, you know, being from a hometown, I'd bought me a 1977 Monte Carlo. I was looking good, you know, Ken, had me some payments going on and had my money saved up. But, you know, being from our little town, if you don't play high school football, you know, you just missed an opportunity. So I talked Pat into giving me time off to go to play football. So I was coming back and I was broke, Ken. And, well, Pat was leaving and we had a new body shop manager called Eddie Rule. His name was Eddie Rule. And so Pat said, oh, Jack, I forgot to tell Eddie about you. Boy, I mean, my heart went down my ankle skin. So he's in there putting a sale on Eddie. Then Eddie came out and he said, Jackie, I really don't need you. But he said, Pat said, you're a hand. I'm going to give you a try. And I said, sir, that's all I need. And I went to work. And he had another great impact on my life. I talk about him in my book as well, how he believed in me. And both of those men poured into me as well. And then I really met my mentor, the real estate cowboy. We can talk about him here in just a minute. His name's Paul Howard, who is my father-in-law today.
So he's your father-in-law at this time, and that pulls you into that area. And you had so much drive. And I wonder today, looking at the comparison, you know, we started with very little. I think that's a given. You're an Okie, so I am
that's
too.
Right. Exactly.
And you come from a farm, and your parents were from the Depression era, and you had a lot of drive that moved you forward. The question was, what were you going to do with it? You know, would you stop there as being a mechanic and just live that life? You could live probably pretty comfortably and close to the vest, but you decided you wanted more than that. Did you always have that feeling in your gut that you wanted to reach out and do more things, or did it just kind of fall in place?
No, I always had a dream to own my own business, and, you know, learning about entrepreneurship from my dad was a great help. You know, he gave us six pigs a year for our pay, and I knew if I could make the local show with Kenneth Hayes, our local banker, handing out money, I was going to get paid. Kenneth, and there again, another great man that poured into my life that we'll talk about here in a little bit. But yes, yeah. I always had this drive. As a matter of fact, do you remember the Boys Life magazine? We used to get out there in the middle of nowhere, Ken.
Yeah.
Well, one day I looked in there and it said you can make money selling grit newspaper.
Grit so, newspaper, yes.
Yeah. So I'm 11 years old, go to Dad, and I said, Dad, I'd sure like to sell a newspaper and make a little cash in my pocket because, you know, selling those pigs twice a year, I didn't, you know, it was semi-annual payment, you know, getting paid. He said, sure, but you got to get your chores done. I could never do anything until I got my chores done. Once the chores were done, Ken, do anything I wanted to do. I said, Dad, I got a problem. The closest neighbor's a mile away. We had a little Caltrail 70 Honda. I said, could I use that? He said, sure could. So here's this little 11-year-old boy knocking on a door where you couldn't turn me down. And what they would do, they'd send me a sample, go to the door, and I would collect the quarter for the next month. I kept a nickel, and I sent 20 cents back to Grit Newspaper. Do you know, Ken, after 2 years, I had a pile of nickels I'd saved. So the entrepreneurship was in me from 11 years old, and I talk about that in the book.
Well, it's so good to define entrepreneurial instincts because every generation needs them. And at that point, the chores that you and I had to do on the farm, and this is, you must do chores. You don't eat till the pigs eat, that sort of mindset in my household too, was something that is hard today. I'm not critical of today. It's just so different today that I'm not sure that most kids have a responsibility placed on them that is a true responsibility ever in their years at home with their parents.
Correct. And that's why you and I know the 4-H and the FFA programs. I promote them so much because they had such a great impact on my life. You know, just the things that they teach, you know. Taking care of animals, as we all know, is a big responsibility. And, you know, the proper bedding, proper, you know, Dad said you can't starve a profit into livestock. You got to feed them well, give them the best, you know, best care. But, you know, and I tell a story in there, you know, we had a dairy as well. We had a little four-stall stanchion barn on my grandma's listing, 80 acres there at Post and Britton Road. And, you know, I love the milk cows, Ken. Out of all the farming, I loved the pigs, but I didn't have the pig gene like my brothers, my dad had. But I loved the dairy cows. I was calm around them. I could get more milk out of them. And so when I was 13, it was my full-time job. I traded with Bart. He loved the pigs, so I went milking the cows. You know, so here I am, 13 years old, get up at 3:30 in the morning, and the cows were always down at the south end, you know. One day I asked Dad, I said, Dad, can I take that little Caltrail 70? He said, no, you'll spook them. They'll run through the barbed wire fence. So you're walking in the dark half a mile down and half a mile back. And it was a valuable lesson. And, you know, 7 days a week, it had to be done. And I tell a story about that later in the book.
Was Don Ramsey your VOAG teacher?
No, but he was a great friend, and his kids still are today. Of course, you know, Don passed here a year or two ago, and what a wonderful man. That was blessed to grow up in our community.
He was a VOAG teacher in Jones and then went on to start a company called Blue and Gold Sausage.
Yes.
And did exceptionally well with that and gave back a huge amount of his revenue to the FFA organization and others. And it was there's some classy people that came from your part of the world. I wanted to jump us forward into your real estate career and talk about the 1980s. And folks, if you think that agriculture always had a smooth go or that business always had a smooth go, the 1980s was a disruptor beyond belief other than the 1930s. So how did you get into real estate and what did the 1980s do to you?
Great question. And it's a key part of the book. So my dad, Bob Liston, became a real estate broker in the mid-70s, Ken. And Dad was really great with farms and ranches and commercial properties. And he met a man by the name of Paul Howard that was a retired professional bareback rider. Paul had come to our area and started developing acreages for people. There was a huge market for places for people to move to the country. Mobile homes were a big deal back then, and they could get their land payment equal to, sometimes less than, what they were paying rent in a mobile home park. And we'd finance the property. So Paul had developed 160 acres there in the Cummel Park, which is just, you know, over by our little areas we grew up in. And then he decided to come out in our area around Jones. Well, my dad sold Paul 160 acres of land there, kind of between Jones and Luther. And then Bart, my older brother, was managing a hog farm in Cope, South Carolina, and had moved back needing work. So Paul was needing help. So Bart went to work for Paul first, selling acreages. I was at Bob Moore Cadillac. And so I go after work and go over to Dad, and he started talking about Paul's business and his business plan. And boy, this really got me excited. Talked to Bart. He started making some money. And Ken, I could dream and see myself selling land. So like you said, it was the oil boom was on. We had about 2,900 people a week moving in here. We had good paying, high paying jobs. Other parts of the country up north, the economies had gone south. You know, General Motors was laying off people in different states, and they started moving in here. And so one weekend they had several appointments, and Bart had mentioned that I was available. I came down, sold 20 acres. And I made more money in one weekend. I make all month pounding on fenders of Bob Moore. I said, well, I like this. So Paul hired me. And yes, I did end up marrying the boss's daughter. He's my father-in-law today. And that was in February of 1981.
So 81, and that was when we had a recession beginning. We had interest rates that were sky high, 18 to 21%. A lot of people paid. Probably you'll tell me what you paid at times. But it was a rollover from the good times of the 70s to the resulting times of the 80s to correct this inflation problem that now we have again today that got out of hand to the point they slammed the brakes on by jacking up interest rates. And if you're in the land business, that had to be a huge deterrent to be able to sell land or make any money.
Yes, it was. We went from, I can remember this specifically, we bought Jeep Wagoneers that we used to tour people on the land because it's four-wheel drive and they were nice, you know. And I can remember my father-in-law bought a brand-new Jeep Wagoneer in January of 1981, and the interest rate on his loan was 14%. Bart bought his in March of 1981, and his was 16%. I'm the lucky guy that bought mine in May of 1981. I paid 18% interest. It jumped that high that quick. And the highest we paid that I remember at the bank was 21%. My grandmother had sold the farm in 1980. We lost my grandfather to leukemia. And she took that money and put it into a CD and was drawing 15% interest on certificate of deposits at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hard to
get. Yeah, there were people that were doing really well on CDs at that moment. They liked that. But for people who had money borrowed and had property that was being reduced in value, it would bankrupt you from two fronts. One was they reduced the value of what you owned, meaning that you were not solvent. And then the interest rate was so high, you didn't have any revenue to meet that. So you were walking a tightrope. There's no doubt about it. How about this Penn Square Bank? What was the factor of that bank bankruptcy in Oklahoma City that impacted you?
So July 5th of 1982, I came home that evening in the news, and there were people lined up, Penn Square Bank. I thought, what's this? And little did we know, the domino effect that that bank would have on our whole nation. And there is a book called Belly Up. You can read the whole story. It was a perfect storm with how Congress passed their certain laws. We had the Iran oil embargo, and then we had, you know, the boom here in Oklahoma because oil prices went high. And then we had this bank called Penn Square Bank, and the lending was so loose there. My father-in-law actually went and talked to the president there. He sold him a My father-in-law would trade. You'll find it in my book. He loved to trade, you know, land and stuff on down payments. So he had this horse in a trailer that he sold the president of Penn Square Bank. And the president said, well, what do you do? And he said, well, I develop land. And he said, well, you ever need borrowing money? He said, well, I've had some guys approach me about doing some oil investments. He said, what do you need? He said, $1 million. He said, what do you got? He said, I've got loan receivables. He said, you're approved. And that's how loose. And that's $1 million loan.
Yeah,
and they had stuff like that. And thank goodness that didn't happen. And so, and it just, and then they were selling, I guess, this paper up, you know, to other banks. And it was, you just got to read the story about it. But it was that's what caught, that was the beginning. Yeah.
Jackie Liston is my guest. He is from the same part of Oklahoma I am, and he has a book out called A Place Called Through. It's a very enjoyable read. I read the whole thing. I could hardly put it down. It's not a big book, but it certainly is an interesting one, and we're about halfway through it right now. I got a story I got to tell you because this happened to me, and you're going to appreciate the names I drop. I'm at Channel 4 in WKY Radio in Oklahoma City, and I'm about a 27-year-old guy, and I'm in the farm news department, and every morning I worked with a disc jockey by the name of Danny Williams. And Danny was the most known personality in the state, and Danny had was a shuck and jive guy, and he had buddies here, there, and yonder. And one morning, we're in the new building that they have built because of the good times that they were having, and I'm reading the Hog Market live, and I hear the door of the studio open, and there's four of us in the studio, Danny, myself, the news director, and my boss, whose name is Russell Pearson. Mm-hmm. And a man walked in the most amazing-looking Western suit with a $500 cowboy hat on. And I looked at his face, and I thought, my God, that is Dale Robertson, the movie actor. And I could hardly breathe, Jackie. I was trying to do my report, and I'm just so shocked that I can't put into words what it felt like. And they all looked at me like, yeah, you're having a hard time getting through this, aren't you? And I get the rest of my report out. And it's just after 6 o'clock in the morning. And so Dale comes over and he introduces himself to us. Danny already knew him because he was there to see Danny. And I thought, what the heck would this guy be doing dressed like this, looking like this, who he is? And I heard him say to Danny, they're giving money away. That is the only thing I heard him say, and they kind of ducked. But that, in the years to follow, started making sense. He was so excited about just what you said about Penn Square Bank that at 6 o'clock in the morning, he put on his good clothes and came out and told Danny, they're giving money away.
Boy, they were, too. That's amazing. Yeah.
Well, in a moment, we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about you moving into a banking career and the good you did and the person you are today.
Let's take a moment to talk with Taylor Parker, president of Concept by Iowa Hearing. Taylor, are there widely used medications that can negatively impact our hearing?
Great question, and yes, there are. There are over 200 prescribed or over-the-counter medications that can attribute to hearing loss. And, you know, when we're talking about, you know, medications, the average person over the age of 55, 72% of people over the age of 55 take at least one drug. And two-thirds of all adverse drug reactions occur over the age of 60. So you're talking almost 3/4 of the, you know, population over 55 take at least one drug or one medication. You know, we're talking simple drugs from an aspirin regimen. An aspirin regimen, and we're not talking baby aspirin, we're talking regular size aspirin. If you take an aspirin regimen 5 days a week or more, you have an increased risk of hearing loss by 26%. Some of the big ones are diuretics. So people that have high blood pressure, kidney disease, like the myosin group, you know, erythromycin, vancomycin, that whole myosin group can attribute to hearing loss. Hydrocodone, Oxycontin, Rush Limbaugh is the famous one for that because he, you know, got addicted to the Oxycontin and that caused his hearing loss. Then he had to get a cochlear implant. So, you know, and he was very honest at, you know, toward the end about what, you know, what caused that. Chemotherapy drugs. So if anyone has gone through chemotherapy wreaks havoc, not only on your body, but on your hearing as well. The little blue pill can attribute to hearing loss. So there are, you know, many different, you know, medications, whether they're over-the-counter prescribed, that can attribute to hearing loss. So the best thing to do is, you know, get with your doctor and the pharmacist to find out what the side effects are, if there are other medications maybe where certain certain side effects are less with one versus another. And it's just having that open dialogue, you know, with your providers to really understand, are there, you know, ramifications for the medications I'm taking? And sometimes there's just, you know, there's no other choice but to take the medication, just understanding that it can attribute to hearing loss, and it's something you need to monitor.
Thank you, Taylor. Schedule your free hearing screening at Concept by Iowa Hearing. You could reach them at 877-955-4020 or online at iowahearing.com.
My guest is Jackie Liston. He has just written a book called A Place Called True. Delightful read. A man that I can relate to. He sounds like you're supposed to sound. That's like an Okie. My wife tells me that every time I get around people that are Okies, my voice changes back to having a nasal twang to it. And I thought, well, there's no nasal twang to it. That's just how real people sound. But Jackie, when did you move in out of the real estate business and into the banking business?
Well, like we just previously talked about, the 80s were very difficult. We had the rise and the fall, you know, and just tax reform law of 1987 just pretty much put me out of business. Had to do with installment sales and everything that I sold after that. The government says, yeah, that's fine. You can sell land, but pay us on the whole amount. But I had financed people for 20 years. Well, I couldn't borrow enough money to pay the taxes up front. So, and then people had left the country, you know, left here about as fast as they came. And then you can read it in the book. So I was getting down where I needed to diversify my career. And we had done business with a bank in Purcell, Oklahoma, called McLean Kay National Bank. Wonderful people, family owned, the Sherman family. And they're the one that gave my father-in-law a start and myself. And I was talking to one of their vice presidents one day, Bonnie McCall, and they'd taken millions of dollars of real estate back. The banks, they call it OREO, other real estate owned. And they had this project out east of Norman. I'd been praying about, you know, what am I going to do? What am I going to diversify? Loved working with my family. Did not want to have to leave, Ken, but it was pretty much forced to. But God had a plan. And so one day, Bonnie mentioned they'd taken the subdivision back. And I said, Bonnie, I'm available. Well, long story short, they went to work and hired me to market their OREO. And I tell people, I said, I thought I was selling cookies. No, the real estate home. And so I tell the story about get out there. My office is a mobile home on the corner in a little town called Little Axe out in the middle of nowhere. But I had the expertise. That's what I knew how to do. And I saw through all the problems. I saw there was a solution. And so I went to work.
You moved on toward taking agriculture as your centerpiece in the future.
Yes.
And your banking then. And did you have to change your mindset? I mean, here's a midlife career change for you. Did you have to change your mindset because you're working for somebody else? And you're trying to get them to borrow money from you rather than you borrow money from them.
Yeah, it was different, you know, going from because of the entrepreneur in me. But the good news is the owners of the bank, I took ownership and they knew that and they gave me the outline, just let me go to work. Because I've always had the mindset, Ken, that just treat things like you own it, whether you're working for somebody else or working for yourself. And that's always been my philosophy, and it works very well. So I gave them everything I had, treated it just like it was my bank. And so, I sold everything they had. There was a guy named Frank Conway that was retiring. He was their agriculture lender. Don Sherman, the CEO, called me in one day and said, Jackie, we don't want to lose you. I'd like to hang on to you. We need a loan officer with emphasis on agriculture. I said, let me go talk to my wife. And I don't know what her image of a banker was, Ken, but it was not me. So but she gave her blessing. And I said, no, Paul, I believe God wants me to do this. And so I had a ton of, business experience, but no banking. So they sent me to a couple banking schools to the Oklahoma Bankers Association up at Stillwater, up at OSU, you know, where you went, and some great classes. And it was a great understanding of how a bank operates. And then, Ken, I just went to work. You know, I went out and started calling on all the farmers, and I'd go out and look at their operation, which they dearly loved. And I just started pouring in there. And then one day my son, by the time he was nine, I called the ag teacher, Dale Horton, there in Noble, and said my son wants to show. We joined the 4-H, and I started being dad. And and then started helping the community there. We live out east of Noble. And then one day, Don Sherman called me into his bank, into the main bank, and his office said, Jackie, he said, go find some land. We'll build you a bank at Noble. And true story, they built me a bank.
And you have done a lot of good in the banking industry. I can read that in the book, and I know that of the people. And a banker has a challenge, I think, of being friends with the people they're doing business with. And you pointed out another banker earlier in your career by the name of Kenneth Hayes, who I actually knew personally.
Yes.
And a banker seems to be a good one, able to read character. And I think in the story you tell of Mr. Hayes, who was from my hometown, he read your character as much as he read your balance sheet.
Yes, Kenneth had a great influence on my life. I mentioned before showing, you know, he always supported the 4-H and FFA, and then he had a great impact on my life. And so, yeah, there's a point in the story there, Ken, where everything's falling apart. You can read it. And I'm actually getting a shopping center foreclosed on that I did not want to do, but got to be a lucky partner with my father-in-law and two other guys. And my brother, Bart, my older brother, was partners with us, but he was not a partner on the shopping center, so we needed to get Bart bought out, and I owed him, I think it was $15,300. Now, you got to remember, this is 1988. The whole world's falling apart. It's just, like you said, it's hard to believe how tough it was. So I went to Kenneth. I said, Bart, I just said, pray. I don't know if Kenneth will loan me the money, but I'm going to ask. I said, Kenneth, I need $15,300 about Bart. He said, well, give me a week, Jackie. And our land office at the old drugstore there in Jones and the First State Bank was across the street. So about 2 days later, Kenneth came over and he said, Jackie, he said, are they foreclosed on that shopping center? I said, yes, sir, they are. He said, okay. Went back. Came back next week and he said, well, Jackie, all the loan committee. He said, no, they don't want to loan you the money. But he said, I've known you since you was 9 years old. And he said, I'm going to loan you the money. I said, Kenneth, I promise you I'll pay you. And I did. Now, Ken, he never asked me for a financial statement and never asked me for a tax return. He was going off straight character. And that's the type of friend that Kenneth Hayes was to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, a good banker takes risk on people, and they put you in a position to where that you determine you are going to deserve their trust. And I really think there's nothing changed from then till now about that. We're more corporate today, no doubt about it. But it's still this person-to-person relationship that you've established so many times in your life. Let me bring you out of the end of the banking business. I know that you did a great job moving that bank in Noble on up and being able to then transition in, yourself out. And near the end of your book, you refer that you're going to be re-fired. And I wasn't sure what re-fired meant at the beginning. But as we finish up here, tell me what you are doing today and how you have refired yourself.
Yeah, where that came from, Ken Blanchard wrote a book with another gentleman. He said, refire, don't retire. And so refire is to go forward and retire. In my estimation, for me, it would be I was going backwards. And I told him, I said, you know, this is not retirement to me. I'm going to refire. And they let me use the word. I had it on my marquee. I put it in the Norman transcript. And it was funny, Ken. People come up and said, Jackie, you misspelled the word retire. I said, I did not. I said, refire is a word. And I had more fun with that. And so what happened one September morning in my office here praying, God was calling me out of the bank. And, Zig Ziglar talks about the old water pump. You remember those old water pumps, Ken, out on the farm?
Mm-hmm. Sure,
you
know, have one.
So you remember, you get out there and you start to try to pump, you know, it's like there's nothing down there. So sometimes you got to go grab a bucket, right? You got to prime the pump. But if you ever get that water coming, it's just a good old steady flow. And that's what was going on at the bank. We worked hard. We had success. Loved my employees. I loved leading and loved my community. And God says, time to leave the bank. So I was sitting here praying one morning and I looked up and Margie Keeley, that took my place at the bank, gave me this little cowboy folder. And it was Proverbs 3:5-6. Said, trust the Lord with all thine heart, lean not on thine understanding. And all thy ways, acknowledge him, he'll direct your paths. And I was like the old Westerns, I was calf rope again. I said, okay, God, I'll do it. So I jumped in December 2019. I gave the bank a year. They were so good to me. I'm still on the bank board there. Well, I jumped at a great time, right? Right after I jumped, the pandemic hit. So, and there's three avenues that God showed me. I'm an encourager, Ken. That's what I do. Second thing was real estate, and the third was helping my in-laws on the ranch. They're in their 80s. And so people started calling, Jackie, I need you to mentor me. I need you to coach me. I wasn't the bank anymore. I thought, boy, I need a process. And about that time, Tom Ziegler, Zig Ziegler's son, sent me an email and said, you ever thought about being a Ziegler coach? And I went, duh. First time I saw Zig Ziegler, Ken, was in downtown Oklahoma City in 1998 at a Peter Loeb seminar. Some great speakers all day. And Zig was the first speaker, Ken. He talked for 2 hours. I swore it was 15 minutes. I'd never experienced anything like that. So I bought a set of his tapes, started listening, and it changed my life, transformed me, read his books. And so then I signed up, and they said, I think you'd be a good fit, became a Zig Ziegler certified coach. Today what I do is I'm a lead coach for Ziegler. So it'd be like if, you know, the head coach for the football team, I'm kind of like an offensive coordinator. And what we do is we take people from where they're at to where they want to go. Ken, it's an amazing thing. I see so many of us baby boomers that they're stuck, and they know they have more in them, and they just need somebody to come along and say, I'll go with you. And so I ask them, what do you want? Well, I want to go here. I said, come on, I'll go. And I link my arm with them, and we go. I help them take that first step because I jumped 4 years ago. It's kind of scary, you know, being in your late 50s or 60s. But we have so much to give back. And, Ken, I'm on a mission. You want to know what my mission is?
Yes, sir.
I'm on a mission to get everybody grateful. And did you know that gratitude is the healthiest of all human emotions? And happiness lives in a grateful heart. So my question is, Ken, what would happen if the whole world got grateful?
It'd be a better place, I'll tell you that.
And, you know, this started about 4 years ago. You know how we are here in Oklahoma. Somebody go, how are you doing today, sir? Well, I'd go, well, pretty good. You know, just a little good. They won't tell you really how I was feeling. But I started telling people I was grateful. And here's what I do. They'll go, sir, how are you? I said, I'm very grateful. How about you? And they stop. And they listen. They say, well, I am too. And I said, well, great. I've got these little bracelets. They say, I am grateful. And I said, would you help me get people grateful? And, Ken, they put them on. I said, sir, I sure will. These things are going all over the country. I'm on a mission, and I need help to get everybody grateful.
Jackie, your book is called A Place Called Through. How's the easiest way for people to get a copy of it?
They can get a copy by going to my website, jdliston.com. Would love for them to do that. If they'd like me to sign it, I'd be honored to sign it. Or it's on Amazon. And also, I've just finished Audible. People like this oaky voice out there, so I think in about 2 weeks I'll have it out where they can listen, and I want to have them covered any way they want to get the book.
All right. Well, your golden oaky voice sounds good to me, so I think that would be a great thing. So you can get this at jdliston.com, or you could go to Amazon, A Place Called Through. Jackie,
yes.
Listen, you inspire me. You make me feel like I want to refire, and you also have told, in my view, how you get through tough times and how you then can move to, I think, the ultimate level, and that is, as you say it, grateful. It's been
yes.
a joy to talk to you. Thank you very much.
It's been a great joy, Ken, and hope we get to see each other soon. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks for listening to People in the Know. I'm on the hunt for guests to interview. If you have suggestions, contact me at this email address, kenroot@gmail.com, kenroot@gmail.com. Have a great week.
As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the starry crown, good Lord, show me the way. Oh, sisters, let's go down, let's go down, come on down. Oh, sisters, let's go down, down in the river to pray. As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the robe and crown, good Lord, show me. Oh, brothers, let's go down. in the river to pray. As I went down in the river to pray, studying about the